Super excited for today's guest. Ben Winfield is the VP of Channel Partnerships for Rover Analytics and is a super fun person. So if you're not following him on LinkedIn, you should. I immediately saw him and was like, the pink jacket? Yes, please. The dance break moments? I was like, you are my spirit animal and we will be friends. I had no idea what he did, but it turned out that we're actually in the same industry. So all the better. Ben, with that introduction, please tell us anything else about yourself you'd like to add and a little bit about the Rover Analytics brand and what you guys do.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for having me here and love the pink hair and everything. I'm a little different in this industry as well. I love dance breaks at the start of all my live events and stuff. And, you know, I usually catch my guests off guard and some of them dance and some of them just stand there like, I didn't sign up for this, you know? So a little bit about me background. So I took the very traditional route to get into health insurance, 6 years as a Marine and 18 years as a firefighter. And then somehow I ended up in health insurance. Definitely did not ever foresee that I'd be here, but really it came from still wanting to help people, but also the entrepreneur side of me. I had a real estate company before as well, took business classes, entrepreneurship classes, everything. And one of my best friends had a wellness company in this space and approached me to work with him a couple years back. Wasn't good timing for me. I approached him during the pandemic. It's like, I need to do something with my time. I'm a social person. I'm an outgoing person and I don't get to see anybody. And I feel like I'm wasting my time. I need to do something again. Is there still an opportunity to work together? And if not, then I'm going to figure something out on my own, but I got to do something. And I met him for a dinner and we talked for 5.5 hours at dinner. They kicked us out. So we came back to my house for another hour and a half. And in the end of it, he's like, this was a Friday night. And Monday, I showed up at his house to learn about Rover Analytics and learn what an MGU was. What is a TPA? What are all these things? Literally, the first page of my book is just acronyms, learning what the heck am I getting myself into? So that's kind of how I got here. And then Rover Analytics, our claim to fame is we can get claims data for any fully insured group of any kind, of any size, groups and PEOs, groups and associations. So we're first to market to find a solution to get you information that you can't get to help you at renewals. But also a part of our why is to eventually be able to do care advocacy for these fully insured groups as well. So we recently hit milestone 2, which is we can also run predictive analytics. Not only can we do it for self-funded, we're the only one that can also do that for a fully insured group. So now you can hire a care advocacy group to help those fully insured groups get healthy and get ready to go self-funded in year 2. And where we're going, our next milestone we should have ready by Q1 is we will have our own care advocacy. So you can pick and choose of our services, but we'll have a fully integrated solution for fully insured groups to help them get over to self-funded. So that's exciting. I told him I had to do something I still believed in. I believe in this. I'm passionate about it. And here we are. There you go. That's me and Rover.
Yeah, I love it. And gosh, I'm just thinking like, you describing the meeting with your business partner and like how engaged it was, and then immediately went to like an all-nighter and then the next day, it's like, you're describing the perfect date where Pretty you keep much. Talking until you're kicked out of the restaurant. You're so interested. It's got to keep going. Before we dig in a little bit, I have some follow-up questions to what you shared, but I would love, if you could tell us, about the name Rover Analytics and how that came to be.
So that was picked before I got on board, but I love it. And it was, because we fetch claims data for you. That was like the tagline. And they're really big about puns and branding. So we have the Rover dog. So right now we have our claims retrieval solution and we have a predictive analytics solution. And we have care advocacy that's coming and a couple other services. So the fun about this is we keep that branding in all of our conversation internally, all of our Slack channels. We have it like, for those of us that live in the Pacific Northwest, we're the Rainy Dog Days group, and we've got all these little dog puns. And so we're going to name all of our product lines after dog breeds as well. We're just going to keep that going. We did hire a salesperson with a cat. I don't know how they made it through the screening process, but we did, you know, but we do joke. Most of us have dogs. We love dog stuff. So we're going to keep it going. All the puns that come with it.
All right. Well, I'll put a plug in for my dog breed, the French Bulldog. So let me know if you get to the product make sense for a Frenchie product line.
I mean, if we get into linguistics somehow, you know, we got to have the Frenchie there to help with that. So yeah, for sure.
All right. You know, I want to back up a little bit because you and I are newer to the insurance landscape. Both kind of are like, how did I end up here? But I'm here. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I notice myself doing and even, you know, you doing, there is so much to learn so quickly. Everybody's like, you're drinking through the fire hose when you join in. Yeah. I was wondering if you could break down a little bit of what you shared for people listening who may not be familiar. There's a variety of audience. So does everybody know what self-funded and level funded is? And can you break down what you guys do in layman's terms for maybe businesses who haven't really looked into options available in the insurance landscape?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so true. That's what I had to learn in the beginning. And honestly, some of it I even didn't understand for months. Like I heard about captives and I didn't know what the hell a captive really was for at least like 6 months talking to people. I'm like, oh yeah, a captive. Didn't get it, right? So it is hard. So self-funding is when a company decides to take on more of the risk for their own insurance health plan. So they offer group health benefits to their employees. Fully insured means that they're with a Blue Cross or a Kaiser or those big names that we've all heard of, Cigna, Aetna, all of them. They pay a premium. Cigna or Aetna, whoever they're with, they manage the whole process for them. Their employees use it, pay claims out, whatever. All of that, they just know they pay a premium every month. So they have an X dollar of spend that they're going to spend every year. But what happens is it doesn't matter if the employees, let's say my company spends $1 million in premiums, my employees might only spend 500,000 in their claims. Well, Blue Cross keeps that other 500,000. Thank you very much. And next year, your rates go up, by the way, even though you save, right? So if we go self-funded, what we're doing is saying, we're going to take on that risk. And so when my employees want to go see the doctor, that claim comes out of my pool of money. So if at the end of the year, we only spend 500,000, my company gets to keep that other 500,000 instead of it going to Blue Cross every year. Now, that's the simplest version, right? It, obviously, there are other acronyms and things that you have to set in place. So obviously, you want to protect yourself for what if there's catastrophic things. So that's where you would get a stop loss quote, which is backed by oftentimes the same people, Blue Cross or Kaiser. They even have their own stop loss division because they don't want to lose out on money and they know people are doing this. But that basically says we're responsible for all of our claims until a certain point. And then from here on, Blue Cross will step in and cover the rest of it. It's kind of like we have a deductible to this point. They'll take over. People understand that deductible reference. But that's kind of it. Self-funding, stop loss. We use those words kind of interchangeable, but it is two different factors of going self-funded. Does that kind of help?
That does. I mean, I just think of it like the oh shit rail in the car. Like yeah. You need something to grab onto if things really go awry. Hopefully it's not needed too often. But yeah, I think it's so helpful just breaking it down into like how we had to learn this as we're speaking to others, because we so quickly get mired in this made up language of acronyms and expect everybody else to follow along. So, you know, you mentioned that Rover can fetch analytics and I see that being as like a unique position for you guys to provide this data, but can you break it down a little bit more again, in terms of the average person, why is what you guys do such a benefit and so rare in today's landscape?
Yeah. So by law, carriers don't have to give data your usage data to everyone. You would think I give you $1 million. You're going to tell me that we only spent 500,000 in claims, right? Mm-hmm. No, they don't have to. It's a big mystery. Okay. So typically if you have less than 100 employees in most states, where in California, it's less than 300 on the plan. So think about that. You could have 299 employees in California that are on your Blue Cross plan, but because you're under 300 at the end of the year, they don't have to tell you what your actual usage was. So when it comes time for your renewal, they say, oh, by the way, your rate's going up 20%. You have no idea why. And you could have had a great year or you could have had a crappy year. You don't know. They just tell you, here's what your new rate is, take it or leave it. So there's no transparency here, that nobody knows what's actually going on. So what we can do is actually get the information to show you, oh, wait, your 299 people that they didn't tell you about, they're charging you $1 million in claims and you only spent 500,000. BS that my rate goes up 20%. You should be giving us a discount or we're going to go somewhere else, right? So it gives the employer power to negotiate and the power to know maybe we are a good fit to go self-funded. Maybe we're a good fit to go into a captive or there's lots of other arrangements. Or they might say, you know what? that 20% is a good deal because we do have some high cost claimants. Now everything's de-identified, so it is HIPAA protected. The employer doesn't know any individuals, anything, but they get to see the numbers and see what's going on. So they can say, you know what? We do have some high cost claimants. It would be risky for us to go self-funded. Let's just stay where we're at. So it really gets you the power to make the decision. I love the phrase, you can't manage what you can't measure. Mm-hmm. And that's it. You can't measure squat from the insurance carriers oftentimes. And even if you're over that threshold, they give you some high level reports. Here's your aggregate information. Here's the, you have five people that all have over 15,000 in claims, but it doesn't tell you why or how or what, where you can't do anything about it really, where the detail that we're giving you, we're using explanation of benefits to get this information. And I'm sure you're going to have me explain that in a minute, but these EOBs tell you the doctors that they go to, the prescriptions they're on, the facilities they're at, when did they do it, how often. So you can tell somebody goes to physical therapy every month always, or they went for 6 months and stopped because they didn't need it anymore. So it allows you from a care advocacy or medical management standpoint to actually have nurses reach out to these people to help them with what's going on. If they notice that you're a type 2 diabetic and you haven't refilled your prescription in 6 months, that's not a good thing. That's going to lead to edema of the legs, which could be amputation. That's going to lead to heart disease that could end up with kidney failure, dialysis. So many problems come from type 2 diabetes that is left unchecked. We can tell we need to reach out to this person to help get them back on track to live a healthier life. It helps them live a healthier life, helps their families have a better life, and it saves the plan money. So it's good in all aspects, but you can't do it if we don't have the data. So that's really our mission, is to get the data to be able to help people make good decisions.
Yeah, I love that. It reminds me of one of my favorite platitudes along the lines of data. It's inspect what you expect. And so if you have a vision and a goal for your company and you're a smart business person, you probably have some plans behind those goals. You're not just saying, this is what we'll do. Go ahead, universe. Sometimes I go that route, but I digress. You got to leave some things up to the universe. However, that data is power. Knowledge is power. And every good decision-making process starts with having data. What's really going on? Yeah. I mean, the questions that came up to me, if I were a business owner considering this move, I would think, what could I do with $500,000 to reinvest in my business and my goals? And it's not an overnight process. We know that. You're being very transparent that usually you can't switch from traditional insurance to a level self-funded plan overnight. But if you have that data and can really run the numbers and look at the analytics that create that vision, it becomes about more than just the huge win-win about better quality of care, more affordable care, but also about really reinvesting in your business and your goals to create the future that you want and bring more people onto your team that have access to this amazing healthcare. Anything else you want to add to that? Because that's just where I get really excited, is when I think about like, what would my perspective be as the person on the other end of this, as the person running the business, making those decisions. It's really revolutionary, the amount of savings, again, not overnight, but with a process and starting with data, what it can do for people.
Well, that's an amazing sales tool, actually, that you just mentioned, which is to identify potential savings, but then put that into something real and put that on the employer. What would you do with an extra $500,000 and let them figure out how they would spend it and then say, now let's go do it, right? So that is a good sales tool. But really, it comes back to when you're able to manage this and see what you can do. We see employers that put this back into lower copays or lower deductibles, lower premiums, covering the costs for the employees, or enhancing the benefits. You know, we'd like to offer extra services. You know, we are a manufacturing plant. We'd like to offer more physical therapy and chiropractor and massage therapy as part of our benefit package. It allows you to reinvest in your employees, which does what? Helps with retention, helps with their happiness, helps with their quality of life. You know, all the studies out there that show that those are going to be more productive employees for you. You're going to reduce your workers' comp claims. Like it compounds once you start doing that. So the opportunity of what you could do with that money is there, but it really is up to the individuals how they're going to impact it. We're just here to show you that you can do something better. Here's what's going on and here's what you can do about it. And it changing the mindset or the mindset, because employers have been told for so many years, this is just what happens. Here's your 12 or 20% increase. And that's just the way it is. Every year your rates go up. And one of my good friends, Donovan Rikus, he showed me one of the things he likes to present, because all the time he hears like, oh yeah, my rates go up just 5% every year. It's no big deal. It's okay. But let's think about it. That's compounding interest. So let's talk 5% this year, another five, another five, another five. And guess what? Your rates have gone up 250,000 over 5 years. It's not just 5%. Like, that's real dollars. And here's where you're going to be in another five. You're going to be at 750,000, more than what you're paying today. Is 5% okay? Or do you want to actually talk about staving off those costs and reducing it for once, instead of just taking the, it's no big deal, 5% every year. So takes a little bit of a mindset shift, and most people don't know that they can do anything about it. So we're here to just tell the world you can do something about it.
Join the revolution. Yes.
Here we are.
Knowledge is power, people. you can always do something about any situation that you're in. That's just the facts of life. But it starts with awareness. And, you know, you mentioned like, well, we're just kind of conditioned to, okay, this is what we do. And it goes up every, and nothing we can do about it. And like, I liken it to just, if somebody was like, hey, here's your shit sandwich, I want you to eat it and enjoy it. Okay. We're going to get you another one next year. Would you just be like, sure, no problem. Love shit sandwiches.
Some people will.
Maybe ask if there's something else on the menu.
You got a little stuck in your teeth right there. Yeah. You know,
anything else on the menu today? Yeah. not where healthcare and insurance is involved, sadly. speaking of that, kind of in addition to what you just shared, is there anything else that you wish more people and like the average person, the average business leader understood about our healthcare and insurance system as is today, the traditional?
Yeah, I think the big thing for them to think about is that it's not your employee's fault. That's how I feel. I don't think that it's the employee's fault. We have not taught them to be good consumers of healthcare. The system that we have in place has not prepared them properly to know that this MRI at a hospital will absolutely cost more than an MRI at anywhere other than a hospital, right? Mm-hmm. So hospital is your highest expense, but also to understand and how to shop. Unfortunately, the system itself is designed where oftentimes, unless you're adamant up front, they never tell you the bill. Up front, you go see the doctor, they might tell you your copay. If you have a copay initially, but they're not telling you that, oh, by the way, this procedure altogether is going to cost X dollars. So you don't even know that shopping at this facility versus this facility, you can get the same MRI or the same image, but it can cost your plan drastically different. And that increased cost now impacts your employer. So that impacts your premiums next year. People don't put all that together because we haven't educated them. So that's how I feel about it. People are not good consumers of healthcare, but it's not their fault. We have not done a good enough job of educating them on how to be better consumers of it. And even employers, because they just take that increase every year, don't want to take the time to educate them. So there are a lot of services out there that can help shed light on it. There are programs that will show you, even fill in your prescription, right? You can go to this pharmacy versus this pharmacy for the same exact prescription, same insurance, and pay two different prices. That is how crazy our system is. Mm-hmm. But people don't know that. So they just go to their favorite one, when maybe if they drove 5 minutes farther, they could get it for half the cost or something, right? So those are just little things that we don't educate people on. And it goes back to that transparency. So I'm in my little world trying to bring out the transparency I can, so we can start to educate people on these differences. If you're going to have a surgery, you know, again, to an outpatient facility, if you can, it's going to cost a fraction of doing it at a hospital. It's just the bottom line of how the cost systems are broken down.
Yeah, there's a complete lack of transparency at all levels along the system, intentionally so. They do not want people to figure this out, because if you do, you'll realize that there are solutions that exist today, such as Rover Analytics and other wonderful solutions we've had on this podcast that get you walking down the path to change, both short and long term. And the system relies on you and your money. So why would they want you to make that change and start walking that path?
Nobody in the system wants you to see what's going on behind the curtain. And that's what we're here to do. And some other great companies, we're here to pull that curtain aside and say, here's what's actually happening. Take a look and let's do something about it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I am such a fan of storytelling. I think that's how we kind of break down barriers and can listen to opinions that differ from ours. So with that said, do you have a favorite customer experience story, either employer group or even employee or two, that you can share with the audience about the impact working with Rover Analytics had on the organization?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've had some broad level things all the way down to small level, but I'll share like a broad in general for a company that we had, and then I'll share a very specific one that really meant a lot to me. So on a broad level, just cost savings wise. So company wanted to leave their fully insured arrangement. They wanted to go to a captive, which a captive very high level is it's a place where you're kind of self-funded, but you're sharing risk with others. So if you have a bad year, the other groups kind of help pick up your slack. And if you have a good year and they have a bad year, you pick up their slack. And in the end, you all kind of help each other out. So again, it helps from those really extreme claims and costs. So they want to go to one, and they were going to get a better rate than their fully insured renewal, but it wasn't that much better. But they're like, we're pretty sure we're a healthy group. But the captive's like, well, we don't know because you have no data to show us. So it was 82 employees or so. I think it was 82 or 84. I want to say 82. They came to us, got the data, went back to that same captive. It was like, oh, we were right. We're a healthy group. So you better come down. They came down $235,000 on the premiums to join the captive. So that was about $2,800 per employee per year that they saved to go. And they spent about $2,400 to get the data from us. We're a cheap product, I know. But so they spent about 1% of their overall savings to come get the data and go in. So just to show the magnitude that it, and the potential that's there when you actually see your usage and your claims usage versus taking their word for it, right? But I want to go a step farther. So we had another group that came to us, or even actually it was the same group, but to dive in further on that, by seeing what's going on with the data, they were able to identify that there was a family, the broker could, there was a family that was going out of network for procedures for a dependent. So he reached out to them and say, what is going on here? What, you know, what's going on? They were able to identify this family is paying about $7,000 out of pocket, out of network to help this family out or to help their child get some specialty care. Because they could see this was going on in the plan, they were actually able to build it into the plan. They were able to talk it to the community and find community resources to help with it. At the end of the day, it became zero cost to the family, zero cost to the plan to get that child some better care at a better facility. All of that was possible because they could see the data and see what was going on in the plan. Okay, without that, they would have just continued on that same road, which was hard on the family, hard on the child, hard on even the plan. Mm-hmm. So that was the same group. They had this big savings for the whole group, but they also had that individual that had that big thing. So that to me is amazing and the power of this. We also had a group where somebody was about to have a heart surgery and this little podunk town in Kentucky was going to go to the local hospital, the only place where he could get his heart surgery done at. And he was pre-authorized like $180,000 to go do that. The surgery was scheduled day two after going self-funded. So the company was going to say, yay, we're going self-funded. And then bam, get hit with this massive claim right off the bat. But because the broker could see all the pre-authorizations, the facilities where they were going, the broker reached out and said, hey, I see something's going on. What's going on? The gentleman acknowledged, yeah, I'm about to have this heart surgery. It's right here. And he said, what if I could get you to a better facility? Can we just put a pause and let me make some phone calls? So he contacted Johns Hopkins University. I don't know if you've ever heard of Johns Hopkins, maybe or not.
Heard of that. But
yeah, maybe. Might have a higher caliber heart surgeon than Kentucky. No offense to that surgeon in Kentucky, no offense, but you know, this is at a better facility. They're state of the art. They're leading in this industry. The CEO flew him, his whole family, and their dog. I love that part. They flew the dog too. flew them all out there for the week to get the surgery done there with a direct facility contract. That gentleman got a better quality of care at a better facility, better recovery. His whole family got to be there for him for zero copay, where he would have had a copay at his little one in Kentucky. And the plan saved over $50,000 to the plan. So it's one of those win-win for everybody because we could see what was going on. Those are just a couple of stories of how a broker is able to see what's happening and actually make an impact on people's lives and financially help the group while they're at it.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of living the dream in terms of a work life. If you can live somewhere that pays your bills and make a good living and feel like you're making an impact, but at the same time, like improve people's quality of life, their health, their family's health, and save businesses money. Like that's the type of stuff that I imagine must drive a lot of passion from you and the team at Rover Analytics.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I told my partner when I came over to work, I was like, for me to quit being a firefighter. So I've been a firefighter 18 years and a lieutenant. I'm like, I have to believe in what I'm doing. I can't just leave for money. I got to believe in what I'm actually doing too. Nothing will ever replace the feeling that I get from being a firefighter. It just won't. I mean, you do a CPR save and you save someone's life. Like, nothing will compare to that. I know it. But I still feel great about the impact that we're doing. And I actually put in my notice and I'm leaving the fire service next month. So that just is a testimony of how much I believe in what we're doing here. And it's pretty cool.
Well, congratulations to you, Ben. That's really exciting and very well deserved. You know, I don't know you well, but we've connected a few times, and also just hearing what you have to say about anybody who goes into a life of service the way that you have, like, you're clearly a giver. So we're grateful to have you here in the healthcare revolution and bring all that goodness along with you. On a lighter note, speaking of compliments, since I just gave one, what's the best compliment you've ever received in your professional life, Ben?
Ooh, the best. You know, I do get kind of recently, I jump on meetings with people that have never liked or commented on a single thing that I post to LinkedIn, which I post 5 days a week. And then they'll hop on and they just start right off, man, I love your content. I love your energy. I love what you're doing. And it's that reminder that people are watching and paying attention. And I love that these are people that don't feel comfortable in a social networking environment to even put a like on it or to write a comment, but in person, that's one of the first things they want to say. So that's pretty damn cool. I like that a lot. And then there's the U Powered Benefits conference that's coming up, and I just got told I was nominated as a newcomer of the year. So that's kind of a cool feeling too, that the industry's taken note, and I'm already being asked to speak at conferences. So in less than a year to grow to that, feels pretty good. So yeah.
Congratulations to you. That's a major feather in your cap. I'm certainly happy to hear it. Yeah. Toot your toot toot.
Toot, and toot. I love to dance. So hey,
yes. I know. And you know what you said about LinkedIn? I've noticed some of the same things where you and I kind of, this is what we originally connected on. It's just being authentic, like not doing LinkedIn the way LinkedIn's meant to be done, but just being like, all right, we're here. We're going to do however we feel like doing it. And that was kind of our initial, we're like, hey, I see you just doing whatever you want. Let's talk. But it's been interesting. I have the same experience, which is I'm newer to LinkedIn, so I don't expect a huge engaged following and audience, and I'm doing something very different and new. So most people are just like, who are you and what are you doing? But in the messages, it's really sometimes touching, like the things that people will say, or even just somebody that I've never, you know, it's like a second level connection will just be like, you are so beautiful and have great energy. And I'm like, stop it. You're making me blush. But I'm like, yes, you're beautiful too, queen. Like, how can I support you? And it's just a really cool feeling to bring that to the LinkedIn environment. You know, I'm passionate about driving corporate culture change. And these are things that I mean, when you're just kind of yourself and having fun and relate to, you know, friends and strangers alike, that's when kind of magic starts to happen. On the flip side of that, you know, being a disruptor, and again, we're newer to the game, so maybe we don't have all the haters that the more established players do yet, but I'd be interested to know if there's an insult you've received that you're actually proud of.
Well, we had one person that was like our antagonist for a little while, and I was on a couple conferences talking, and just, he has put out some content to try and talk bad about us and in comments, and then even wrote like a newsletter and compared and contrasted us and talked just basically. I think insult wise, we did have one person that is like our antagonist and was out there for a little while, and don't hear anything anymore, but he, you know, he made negative comments like, oh, it's not real claims data. And, you know, it's not good for this and you don't need it. You can get, you know, health questionnaires. And he kind of did a couple of things about this. But then he's been on webinars with, and the funny thing is he's never seen a demo. He's never seen our reports. He never even seen anything. So it's like, how are you here trying to talk crap about it when you've never even seen it? And then later I found out, I think it was kind of a personal thing with an employee here. I don't know him, but you know, somebody else. And so he just wanted to not be in with what we're doing. But it was kind of cool to have him on a webinar that I was doing. And this was with Les Morales, who is kind of like a GA. He helps a lot of brokers do other things. And we've done several groups together. So I'm presenting there and I noticed that this guy's, you know, in the group watching us. So when I get to where I want to talk about a case study, I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to talk here. Lester, this was with you. Can you share one of your experiences? So this is a guy he respects. Now Lester is talking and Lester shared, Yeah. Unless there was one of them was the direct contracting with the heart surgery. And he talked about that. He's like, we never would have gotten this without your data bin. Like, had we gotten a traditional claims report, it never would have included this. And the bottom line is what we offer is not a traditional claims report. It is different, but most brokers will tell you it's better because it's more in depth. So it's kind of funny. His argument was it's not a traditional claims report when, yeah, actually most people that have seen what we do, they like it because it's better than what you're arguing about. So that I think was the only real negative that's kind of funny to me, which he hasn't made any negative comment ever since. So.
Yeah, well, haters gonna hate until you call them out and then they're like, I'm just gonna disappear. Yep. Gosh, yeah. And anybody thinking about running a smear campaign, you should really be mindful of your karma. That's just lame.
Just dumb.
Just dumb. And it's speaking of transparent, that is transparent. Everybody can see right through it and you look real foolish.
Yeah, just make yourself look dumb. That's it.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And you're not having a lot of fun while doing it. Like, how fun is it to go tear down others? Like, join the party. Yeah. Have a dance party with Ben and I. We do it all the time.
Maybe he doesn't like to dance and that's it. I don't know. Could be.
Well, if you don't like pink and you don't like to dance, then as Mean Girls would say, you can't sit with us. I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm kidding. You can sit with us no matter what color hair you have. And if you like to dance or not, we welcome everybody.
Everybody's welcome.
Okay. So back to business owners, kind of want to shift gears here. Do you believe that most leaders today have a solid enough understanding of healthcare and the insurance landscape to make sound business decisions about how to impact its rising costs or what changes to their strategy are needed? I know that's a funny question, but I'd love to hear your answer.
No, I don't think they do. The funny thing is right, for most employers, it's their second or third largest expense, right? Payroll is always number one. It's either second or maybe it's third if their product is number two, but it's super high in your cost, yet we've just been conditioned to take it. And so most of them just like, it is what it is, right? They want to do something, but they don't think there's anything to do. And I blame brokers. Sorry, brokers, there's a lot of great ones out there, but I blame a lot of brokers because if you actually look at the fact that brokers get paid from the Blue Cross and the Kaisers and the Bucas, all of them, they really are not incentivized to tell you to take less or to negotiate less, because the more that you pay, the more their commission is. It's kind of like real estate, right? The more your house is worth, the more that realtor makes. Selling $1 million home versus selling a $300,000 home, there's not three times the paperwork, yet their commission is three times the amount because it's purely based on the dollar, right? So a broker in real estate and a broker in health insurance is not incentivized to get you a better deal. They're just not. Doesn't mean that they're not good people out there. So brokers that are willing to talk to you about going self-funded are ones that truly care. That's my opinion. They truly care about you and as a company, because they're not just in it to get their big paycheck. They're here to do what's right for you, to help you save money. And sometimes brokers end up making more when they go self-funded because they're doing more work for you. So they make more, but you save more too. So it's worth it, you know, and you actually look at the big picture of things. But yeah, I think most companies don't know what to do. And some of them don't even use brokers, which is fine. But they don't have the time and energy to put to it, right? HR usually gets tasked with this and human resources is already swamped with everything else. The CFO steps in because they want to know the dollars, but they don't want to deal with all the benefit part of it. So it does typically fall on HR, who's not as worried necessarily about the dollars as much as they are about providing for the employees. So you got this kind of contradiction there as well of who should be in charge of managing the healthcare, right? So I think there's just a lot of unknown and they just don't know what to do about it. So absolutely not.
And then continuing that, say that the business owner in our imaginary business owner we're talking about had educated themselves on self-funding and had started walking down that path towards change, but wasn't familiar with Rover Analytics. Where do you see the most mistakes being made in your experience and what you've learned, or even to picking up people who started that process and then realized, oh, maybe I didn't have the right information to do this correctly? Do you have any stories you can share around that topic?
I don't have stories around that. I don't know, because, you know, my exposure is really limited to people that who do come to us and work with us. So I'm not sure about that. I do know that, through talking with brokers, there are companies that go self-funded and it doesn't work and they need to come back to, and they go back to fully insured because it didn't work. And really part of that is how it's structured. I give you a really simplified version of self-funding and stop loss, but it gets really in depth as to how you set your spec and your ag and all the stop loss, right? That oh shit handle you talked about, that there's parameters to that. And if you don't know what's going on in your plan currently, you don't know where to set those parameters. And if you screw that up, you could end up paying out a lot. So, and then there's run in and run outs, and there's all these other factors that come into it. So having the data absolutely helps companies make that transition. And in the past, when they couldn't have this data, sometimes they're like, we're ready. Let's just roll the dice and go for it. And when you roll the dice, sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes they really weren't a healthy group. So I'm not promising that when you come get your data, you're going to say, we're going to get our data to go self-funding. You might get your data and say, whew, we need to say where we're at right now. Excuse me for that. So that is the case. We have had a couple of companies that got their data that were wanting to go self-funded, but realized based on what we see, now that we can actually manage it, we know that we need to not go self-funded this year. Let's have a game plan for a year from now. Let's get a better rate this year, but let's actually do care advocacy. Let's turn on the predictive analytics, care advocacy, and let's get ready for next year. So that is what I am seeing. Now we're seeing more companies that come to us with a year out plan. Instead of just rolling the dice last minute, they're coming to get the data, keep the predictive on, care advocacy, and a year from now, we're going to try and go because we're going to get healthy this year. So I've seen that. I have seen people that weren't ready to go, but I don't really get to, I don't get the exposure of groups that aren't getting the data because then I just don't know about them. So,
yeah, well, fair enough. None of us know what we don't know, but
yeah,
it's super interesting because, you know, I always try to have a focus on the solutions. And that's a big part of the passion I bring to this project is letting people know all these solutions that already exist today. And I hear you, like, maybe you get the data and then say, oh, we're not ready to go self-funded. Yeah. We have a problem we need to fix. There's other existing solutions that may be able to save you money and provide better and more affordable access, more control over healthcare for you and your teams and their families with some of the other players in the marketplace, like medical cost sharing and direct primary care. And we won't go into all of those today, but that's what I kind of fell in love with this movement is looking at everybody has a different place to live. And they're like, yep, none of this makes sense for every business owner. Everybody's unique. Every person, yeah, every body is unique. Every business is unique, but we have kind of a group of people who all have a slightly different angle and approach to it. And we're all really working together and saying, hey, you know what, this will be your entryway. And then when you get to this point, come over and we'll work with you again. Yeah. And I really love that part of the movement. And kind of on that, you know, I ask everybody, being a podcast about revolutionaries in their field, you know, that's a little bit about what being revolutionary means to me, but what does being revolutionary mean to you, Ben?
Well, first I want to finish with what you're saying and say, there is absolutely no silver bullet in health insurance. There is no one solution that will cure your problem. And we feel strongly about what we do, but you're absolutely right. We are not everything. We're just one piece of a really big pie. But I think being revolutionary is just really trying to make a difference and make a change. It's kind of cliche, but you know, on Silicon Valley, the tech show that was pretty fun to watch, you know, they were talking about going to TechCrunch and you're seeing all these companies that are there and all these tech companies are trying to get funding. And what is their mission? They all say, we're here to change the world, right? And I know that's cliche, but like in a way, we're all here trying to impact positively and actually kind of change the world. So I don't have great, you know, delusions of grandeur that we're like actually changing the entire world. Like, but it feels good to be revolutionary. To me is that we're actually here trying to make a difference and change the landscape of our industry. So that 5 years from now, we're not going to be doing things the way we were now. And it's going to be because of our company and our impact that companies are operating in a different way. The fact that you can do care advocacy for fully insured group, that's never before been possible. And now you can actually help these fully insured groups get healthier. Revolutionary. We're here to make a difference so that you can actually help your group stay and get healthier lives. So yeah, that's what it means to me. And I love being a part of it.
Yeah, it's so awesome. And you're right. The only way to drive change is one step at a time. So it's just, here's a landscape, all these solutions. The solutions will look different. What exists 5 years from now will be different than what exists today. But there's so many solutions that exist to start that walk so that at least this corner of the world can be a little bit better. I mean, improving people's health and that has a very real impact on all areas of their lives. So it's an important mission. What's been, is there any questions I haven't asked you yet that you wish I had? And if so, how would you have answered them?
Ooh, here we go.
Free reign. The floor is yours.
Well, we've already talked a little bit. So now I'm trying to think, did I get to share my why with you today of our company? That 5.5 hour chat that we had was partly, you know, him sharing with me the why and where we're going.
I don't know that you did expand on it. I didn't ask a follow-up because you mentioned that's part of our why, but I bet you could probably extrapolate and share a little bit more. That our audience loves hearing those.
Yeah, I can keep it a little quicker here too. So, really, you know, this stemmed from Benjamin Prinsing, our CEO. His father had a heart attack, and he worked for a smaller company that didn't get their claims data, couldn't have a care advocacy company involved, but he had all the signs and symptoms that somebody should have been reaching out to him. You know, the high cholesterol, high blood pressure, you know, some weight management issues, all this stuff that says we should be talking to you, but they had no ability to do it because they were too small to get their data. They were under 100 lives, couldn't get their data, so they couldn't have this company. So that really was the why. And he set out to say, how can I get the data for these fully insured groups so that we can do that? So that is our ultimate goal, to get there. We have phase one was, how do we get the data, or milestone one? And so we've met that milestone. That's what Rover is known for, is we fetch you your claims data, right? Second milestone is, we have to have predictive analytics so that we can analyze all the information and be able to tell you what's going on. And there are predictive analytics companies out there for self-funded clients, but none of them work on the fully insured, because they all need diagnosis codes. And we're not getting that on the fully insured from our EOBs. So we had to build a unique predictive analytics that uses machine learning and machine IQ to fill in the blanks. So we had to build a program that can actually, without a diagnosis code, put all the pieces together and let you know, oh, by the way, you could be in kidney failure right now. Like, we're not a doctor, we don't diagnose, but you need to go talk to a doctor about this right now. And so the third step is having a care advocacy or medical management company that's managing this data to reach out to you and say, Ben, you need to go see a doctor based on what we see here. So we're going to have that third milestone, Q1 of our own care advocacy. So we will finally have met, like, literally the goal of our company by then. Now, of course, you don't start a company and just stop somewhere. So we have products 4 and 5, and like, we're going way beyond that, but that's our start. That was our mission, to get going, and our why. And so we've met 2 of our 3 milestones. We're going to remain agnostic in every way. We want people to be able to plug and play. If you got your own favorite medical management, go ahead and use them with our data. We don't care, but we want to have that solution for these fully insured groups, so nobody has an excuse of we couldn't get our data, so we couldn't prevent this heart attack. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, you know, listening to you talk, it just reminds me of the power of stories behind it, because I have more of a creative approach to things. So sometimes I can gloss over with numbers. It's funny because it's true.
I'm a data guy.
Yes. So I'm like, ooh. So sometimes if you're explaining something, even though I do, as a business leader, want to understand the financials and take a P&L seriously and all the data that goes into measuring your key performance metrics, you're silly not to look at them and to take advantage of the power. But when you understand the reason behind it, the why, the stories, and how it impacts people on a human level, it makes you care, because why would you care about a number at the end? You know what I mean? Everybody cares about the numbers that impact their role, but it's hard to have an emotional attachment to a number on a piece of paper. It's very easy to have an emotional attachment to creating a better life for yourself, your family, your teams, their families, and moving your business vision forward. So I'm super excited to see the team at Rover Analytics go through Q1 and bring the care advocacy team into life, and then to hear more as you're able to share about kind of what stage 4, 5, and 6 and beyond looks like for you guys. Before we wrap up today, is there actually, you know what, you and I kind of bonded initially over dance breaks. So just as kind of a fun giggle to close us out, what is your favorite song to do a dance break when you need to just shift the energy and kind of shake it off?
Ooh, so Shake It Off is a good one, by the way. I'm a fan of Tay Tay, but my big passion is electronic music. I just love the beats that come with it. And so there's one, I actually posted a video of it. It's called El Jefe, and it's got like this electric beat, but it also has a Latin feel to it. It's just super fun, and it just always puts a smile on my face. But that's not the only one. I listen to all different stuff, so it just depends on that specific mood. Every time I've done a live event since I started this, I always start with a song, and I pick I mean, I've had ABBA as my initial song. Mm-hmm. I did El Jefe once. Like, I have a broad range because I love all kinds of music. And fun fact, I also used to DJ and like DJ weddings. So so I do know a lot of music. So I can go any genre. I just love music. So
all right. So. Awesome. Yeah. I've been so into Kygo lately with like the old school songs, but like a good beat. I'm like,
a little tropical house with it too. Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. There's like a Kygo's festival good. In December. I was like, should I go?
I might be going to one in December. We'll talk offline about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk about palm trees and stuff after this. exactly. Thank you so much for being here today, Ben. And as we're wrapping up, please tell everybody where to find you. Best way to reach out for more information on Rover Analytics.
Yeah. I mean, obviously our website works, roveranalytics.com, but we're all over LinkedIn. I mean, that's my presence. That's where everybody's learned about us. I do host live events once a month on LinkedIn as well. And you'll get various topics. We've done stop loss, reference-based pricing, captives is coming up. Like, we hit all the major stuff. And they're always audience participation. We want you to show up and ask questions. Like, we're talking through it, but we're also answering from the crowd. They've all been great. So yeah, LinkedIn's it. And actually we use my nickname on that. It's linkedin.com/BenJonWin, BenJonWin. I just realized the other day it still has that. That is my birth certificate name. Just so you guys know, it is Ben, not Benjamin. And my middle name is John, J-O-N, not Jonathan. Last name is Winfield, but we realized that in high school, if you drop the field, then it's just BenJonWin. It's my ninja name, BenJonWin.
And also back to us being spirit animals. My name is Nikki, not Nicole. Yep, my middle name is Lee. I grew up in Georgia. I was like, Nikki Lee, you had to go with Nikki Lee. Come on over here. And my last name, Winfield Fielding.
Oh man. We were meant to be best friends. So.
This was meant to be for sure. So thank you so much. What a fun conversation, Ben. And what awesome things you guys at the River Analytics team are doing out there. So such a pleasure today. Have a good one.
All right, you too. See ya.